through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
We started this segment after last week's win over the Patriots. We're going to keep it going this week. It's called What Caught Your Eye? If you want to text any in, you can to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. It's pretty much self-explanatory. We're going to talk about things, specific things that caught our eye. Take a minute to take a look at some of the smaller details of the game, little moments, and try to extract what we can from those. So this isn't, the defense didn't have a great day. This is, you know what? I saw, you know, this person struggle, but Ugo Amadi, he made this play right, and here's what it looked like. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. My first one is going to be DK Metcalf's reaction after the touchback. So I don't know what it looked like on the broadcast. In person, he in the end zone is kind of sitting on the ground, like facing the ground, like you would if you were like kind of kneeling over, and he pounds the ground with his fists. And I kept getting tweets that I was tagged in because they were just responding to the station, and they were saying like they didn't like the way he was laughing on the sideline, and they didn't like his attitude, and they felt like he should have been benched. I can say from my point of view, he was very, very clearly upset with himself, very clearly frustrated, and clearly just had to learn to put it behind him. But I don't think this was something he took lightly. So that was one of my moments.
Everybody reacts differently to shame.
Yeah.
And embarrassment, and sometimes just, we'll say, awkward situations, which I think yesterday definitely qualifies. Just a quick 10-second story. I remember one time I was in high school, and I had a band. There were five guys in the band, but one guy could not play, was dragging us down. And when we kicked him out, the entire time, I was like kind of giggling under my breath because I was just uncomfortable because the whole thing was awkward. So if you see DK Metcalf on the bench after a play like that, kind of like smiling, it's not because he doesn't care or he thinks it's funny. It's because it's like, man, that was such a ridiculous play. I might as well just laugh it off because it ain't happening again. That, I mean, just trying to dig into his psyche there for a second.
Yeah.
Well, it could be that. It could be nervous laughter and smiling. But also, I do believe that in that moment, there's nobody more upset and disappointed with him than himself. Just knowing DK and how he reacts, he's not a guy that traditionally does things like this. He's not a guy that doesn't care. I mean, this is a pro's pro. And so you have a moment like this, and immediately I know that it's never going to happen again. But my question to everybody is, what would you want him to do? So you want him to be mad and frustrated and to be angry on the sidelines just to appease you? To appease you, to let you guys know that he's upset about it? No. I mean, I want him, by the moment he gets to the sideline, you could be mad just like a quarterback in their mentality. You can be upset and frustrated with yourself that you threw an interception, but you better not show the rest of the world that. And A, you better forget about it the moment you hit the sidelines, because it's time to move on. It's time to focus on what's next. And that's what DK did in that moment. And guess what? Everybody is coming up to him and saying, hey, you know, move on. It's all good. We're going to need you. And so that's what he did. He moved on and tried to think about what was next. Now, in that situation, you know, I think that that's one. But guys, I don't, my what caught my eye this week in week three here is, you know how we, the first couple weeks, we were kind of talking about, let Russ cook. Is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, yes. What are we going to do? Game plan week to week. Well, I think we can kind of throw those questions out the window, because letting Russ cook is not just a week to week question anymore. I mean, clearly this is something that, this is the way this offense is going to be run. Doesn't mean that they might, you know, some weeks they might be, you know, throwing the ball significantly more than they run, or they might be closer to 50-50. But they are going to be favored towards Russell Wilson having the ball in his hands rather than putting the ball solely in Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, like they have in the past. They are letting Russ cook.
I don't think that there's any way that they relent on that. Now, Carson's health notwithstanding, he's still going to be a big part of the offense. But yeah, I agree. It doesn't. The other team's defense and their scheming, unless you're going up like against just the elitist of the elite defenses, and I'm not really sure that there is one in this league this year. At least I haven't seen it. They're not going to take the gas off Russell at all. He's going. I mean, they. It seems like he's passing deep sometimes, even when it's not necessary. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like
no.
Like,
I'm even third the pass and short, third and two, third and three.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it's happening.
Like,
yeah,
when you wouldn't expect them to, it's just like I'm so used to that happening now. I mean, for them to do something offensively, to scheme offensively in a way that wouldn't qualify as Russ cooking, that would be going so far backwards. I'm not sure I'd understand an explanation for that.
But I do think that there's going to be a day when he's not throwing four touchdowns a game. That sounds really basic and simple, but it goes back to that conversation about, okay, do they lean into the run? If they can't get something established, if they're facing a really tough defense, then what happens? What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to have a bad day. It's not because he's not one of the best quarterbacks. The greatest quarterbacks have bad days.
And what does that bad day look like? To Troy Aikman, Sunday was a bad off day for Russ. And I don't argue that there were throws that he should have had, that he should have completed. There were multiple throws that were at Tyler Lockett's feet for incompletions, things like that that are uncharacteristic of Russ. And, you know, that's just him getting over the top and locking out his front leg too much. And those things will change and get fixed. But I think that you look at the expectation level that Russ has for not only that we have of him, but also nationally what the expectations are. I mean, him missing a throw is like, man, this guy's having an off day. He just threw for 5 touchdowns and over 300 yards. The standard is pretty high. And if that's the standard, I feel pretty good going into any game putting the ball in his hands.
I love hearing the sentence or the statement, those things will change and get fixed, from the quarterback's private quarterback coach. That makes me feel a lot better going into next week. It's like Jake's way of subliminally guaranteeing that we will not see any passes thrown behind Tyler Lockett next week. Not going to happen.
That's exactly
my
right.
My turn?
You caught
it
that
is.
Right. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, speaking of let Russ cook, by the way, remember when we first started doing our chant on this show? Go ahead and roll that one, DJ.
Let Russ cook! Let Russ cook! Let Russ cook!
It makes him so mad. Did I say, well, I don't even know what I was talking about.
Okay, now here's the thing. We did not invent the phrase let Russ cook. I know we were reacting to wherever it came from, but on a couple of the national games now, the NBC broadcast against New England last week and the Fox broadcast yesterday, even the commentators and the production team are now mentioning that. Like, it's part of the vernacular in the NFL right now. Is this show responsible for taking that phrase and elevating it into the stratosphere to where it is right now?
As a cornerstone of pop culture and mainstream media in the United States, I think we absolutely have. Yeah.
Nobody else. No other show hammered that concept home as much as we did. Now, it was out there. None of us can take credit. But the reason why people like Al Michaels and Buck and Aikman and all them are joking around about it and using it as part of their description is because of this radio program.
Well, and I would say there's been a lot of people behind that campaign in that conversation, but I would say legitimizing it, not just as a silly catchphrase or as part of Seahawk Twitter and Twitterverse, but that this is the direction that this team needs to go in. Yeah, I think that this show had a lot in terms of being on the right pulse of that conversation and this subject. And, you know, I think that for a long time in the offseason, how much opposition did we hear? How much opposition did we hear from other people and people within our own station about how this concept is just foolery? Yeah, how could you do this? Why wouldn't you just continue to keep doing the same thing? And why aren't you happy with that result? And there's a reason for that, because this offense is capable of what you're seeing unfold before your eyes right now, and that's why we've talked about it and been a proponent of it so much.
509 texting in, you are the show of the cooking people.
It's not a question as to whether or not they're going to let Russ cook. It's a question of how far they're going to take it. Let Russ cook is now the norm. How much are they going to let him cook every bit of Thanksgiving dinner when they get there? Is he going to be responsible for the appetizers, the dessert, the turkey, everything? I think he is. I think by that point, certainly.
Let's circle around and do just one more. We have a couple minutes here, so I'll try to make mine quick. My other kind of takeaway thing I noticed is just how wide open Tyler Lockett was on two of those touchdowns, I believe the first and his third touchdown. I don't know how that happened. Clearly, there was a miscommunication on Dallas' side of things. They know who Tyler Lockett is. They know he's a threat. Maybe they were distracted with Metcalf. Maybe there was an issue in the coverage they were running or busted coverage. But I came away from this game thinking, Tyler Lockett has reminded everyone that he is wide receiver one. And he has reminded everyone that DK Metcalf's ceiling is high, and he's a very exciting part of this offense and has a very bright future and will continue to impress and take another step forward throughout the year. But don't put Tyler Lockett in the backseat here. Nobody puts Tyler Lockett in the corner, is what Tyler Lockett reminded all of us.
And that's one of my other observations, or what caught my eye, is I have written down specifically, Tyler Lockett is so good, so underrated. And it's true, Stacey, that Tyler is a player that I, for whatever reason, quickly gets pushed off to the side in these conversations of best receiver in the league, best receiver on the Seattle Seahawks football team. But Tyler is so important to this group, and that's why, to me, I don't think you have a true number one receiver. I think you have a two-headed monster is more of what you have against Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. It's really pick your poison. Do you want to try and focus on DK? Well, Tyler's going to beat you up all day. Are you going to focus on Tyler and try and take that away? DK's going to hit you with big plays. So I think that this is such a good combination, and Tyler just goes to show that he's not just a speedy guy that's going to be there for you on third downs and moving the ball up and down the field. This guy can get in the end zone, and really happy for him to see him with the three touchdown effort.
Can I offer one more quick thing as far as something that jumped out? Because I don't think we're gonna mention him probably again all week.
Okay.
Who are you, Freddie Swain? How many times have either one of you had a conversation about wide receivers, rookie wide receivers, who, you know, well, it's tough for them to get the playbook immediately. Sometimes it takes 2 years before they're really, you know, in there. Of course, Freddie Swain, is he one of those guys? He doesn't look like it. He looks every bit. I mean, sometimes, and I know because their jersey numbers are similar, 18 and 16. How many times has Freddie Swain caught the ball coming on a crossing route and you thought it was Tyler Lockett? At least once.
It's happened a couple times. Yeah, absolutely. He's been fun to watch, and I think for him, he hasn't been asked to make a huge play for them thus far, but he's definitely a guy that's gained a lot of confidence from Russell Wilson. He's been very reliable, and I'm excited to see what he can blossom into, you know, as the season rolls on and what he can be for this group over the next couple years. Before we head on to one more thing, guys, I don't know about you, but for me at least, I think the TV broadcasts have done such a good job just trying to make the game feel as intense and as big of a moment without the crowd there. Quite honestly, the last 2 weeks, I have sat there and said, gosh, I wish fans were in the stands for this moment right here. CenturyLink Field would be rocking. But overall, I have not noticed not having fans in the stands during the game, just simply because they've been that intense and I've been that dialed in and focused on what's going on. So, you know, it's just been, it's an outstanding job to how these players have handled not having fans in the stands. And then also the broadcast really making the game feel just as big.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. The broadcasts are a totally different viewing experience. I'm going back to broadcast for this upcoming game against Miami, and it really is something you just get lost in, and you don't realize there aren't fans in the stadium. I don't think that they have the crowd noise as loud as I thought it would be. The touchdowns are the eeriest thing. It happens, and it's just silence. And, I mean, obviously, you see the players celebrating, and they're excited, but normally what would be fans screaming and getting excited, it's just nothing. So very, very weird. But the broadcasts, I agree, Jake, they've knocked it out of the park. I've been really, really happy with that experience, that viewing experience. All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it. Take it, take it.
Well, this should be the easiest question of all time to Jake. It's like his warm-up question, first down. Is Russell Wilson the clear-cut MVP of the National Football League right now?
Yes. I mean, it's as easy of a question as you can ask me. Absolutely, he is the clear-cut MVP of the league right now. Yes, he broke an NFL record in touchdown passes previously held by Patrick Mahomes two seasons ago. Yes, he continues his streak of most winning or come from behind victories in the fourth quarter and in overtime since 2012. I mean, you just look at the command that he has right now of this offense and how much, not only how stellar of a performer he's been offensively, but how much he means to his football team. He is the epitome right now of what MVP should be. He's not just the offensive player of the year. He is, without a doubt, the most valuable player in the league to his team right now.
Second down. Stacy, what's a stat that stands out to you when you look across the defensive performance in these first three games?
I'm going to say it's the red zone. So I'm going to go over just in three games. This is just a snapshot of basic stats for the Seahawks defense. This doesn't capture, goal line stops and interceptions and good plays that they have had, nor does it capture good play from Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright or Jamal Adams. This is just numbers, but here's what it is. They are allowing an average of 497 net yards per game. 430 of those yards on average have been passing yards. So they're able to stop the rush. No team has been able to get more than 72 rushing yards against them. They're averaging 66. But teams are throwing all over them. Most yards came in the most recent week against Dallas, 461 passing yards. No surprise here then, the average gain per pass play is 7.8. Run play is 3. So good numbers for the run, really bad numbers for the pass. But let's get into some of their third, fourth down conversions and red zone conversions. This is where I'm sure the Seahawks are looking at it. I'm sure they're concerned with the yards. I'm sure they don't love it. But I guarantee you their eyes are on making sure they get off the field on third down, making sure they don't let teams convert. So far, they haven't been able to do that. So they are allowing, through three games, an average of 51% conversions on third down. They're 21 of 41. That took a slight dip last week. Last week was their best, but it was still 47%. They are, however, 70% in the red zone. They have allowed conversions on 7 of 10 trips into the red zone. It was 100% last week, just one trip into the red zone there, but 3 of 5 and 3 of 4 in the previous 2 weeks. So I guarantee you, third down conversions at 51% and red zone at 70% are going to be big red flags for this team.
You just made me worried all of a sudden. I said earlier I wasn't worried. Now I'm worried. Third down. Jake, how do players handle things when they see their opponent deliver an obviously dirty hit, like the one that happened to Chris Carson yesterday?
Well, typically the way that they handle that, if it happens earlier in a game, they're going to retaliate in some form or fashion. Either it's to the player directly, or it's going to be a defensive player taking it out on a Seahawks defensive player taking it out on a Dallas Cowboys offensive player. There's going to be some form of retribution that ends up happening over the course of a game. They're fortunate that it didn't happen in that moment, but I guarantee you that a tweet from KJ Wright that came out just talking about how ridiculous of a play that was and how this could not be a part of the NFL. That's going to be evaluated and heard from the NFL league office. And I'm curious as to what their decision is going to be in terms of the discipline or the fine that is going to be coming down on Hill. But typically that does get – those things get settled on the field. For Hill's case and for Dallas's case, they're lucky it happened at the end of the game.
I understand Ray Roberts, and I'm just going on what I heard, said something like he wanted to suit up and go out there and, you know, take care of it.
If it gets Ray Roberts that fired up, imagine what it's like if that's one of your brothers that you are – one of your teammates out there on the field. I mean, that's right. A moment that will get your blood boiling for anybody that you see happen, for that to happen, especially your star running back.
Fourth down. Give me one unsung hero from yesterday's game.
I'll give you a couple unsung heroes. How about that? Ugo Amadi stepped up and played big.
Okay.
He did a great job playing nickel. I thought he also did a great job in different spots playing safety when they brought Jamal Adams on pressure. Ugo Amadi had an outstanding day. Look at LJ Collier. You talk about twitch, you talk about flash plays. LJ Collier stood out a couple different times in the run game and in the pass game. I thought he had a pretty excellent day. And then the player that I thought should have been on the active roster and contributing to this team from the very beginning was defensive end Alton Robinson. He made plays in this game that I saw him make in practice and in the couple team scrimmages that they had. So it was kind of a head scratcher to me why he was inactive the first 2 weeks, but I think he's made a role for himself and clearly has shown that he's a guy that should be a part of not the starting lineup, but should be a part of heavily in the rotation of that defensive line, because this guy can make some plays.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
It's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs at Lamar Jackson and the Ravens for Monday Night Football. When we were talking about the games we were most excited to see this week, I was very much looking forward to this one. I think that we're all expecting it to be a very intense, maybe like a high-flying affair for the Chiefs, but that Ravens defense looking pretty solid too. So, going to be a good one. Can't wait to reflect on it a bit tomorrow. We'll see what happens. Coming up next, we're going to take a look around the NFL. There's a team bringing in Earl Thomas for a workout this week. We'll tell you who next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross.
You knew it was only a matter of time before former Seahawk, former Raven safety Earl Thomas was in for a workout with a team. That team, the Houston Texans. They're 0-3, bottom of the AFC South. Literally nothing to lose right now. This from Adam Schefter, quote, his signing is this week is more likely than not, per a source. But before he signs, he has to first pass COVID protocols. Don't know that I'm too worried about that part. If they want him, they want him. They'll wait if he tests positive. It sounds like a signing is all but imminent with the Houston Texans. Obviously, it would be a great move for them. Earl Thomas, I think, the most talented free agent out there right now. Obviously, there are guys that Seattle should be looking at. Everyone looking to see what's going to happen with Snacks Harrison. But at least a potential landing spot for Thomas with Houston.
It's one that, as you mentioned, Stacey, it doesn't worry me or concern me because he's going to an AFC opponent and one that doesn't look very good this year. So the one thing for Earl Thomas, does he want to be in Texas? His goal was to always play for the Dallas Cowboys. That hasn't happened, so maybe the next best thing is to play for the Houston Texans. I'm curious to see what he looks like and how he will be, what the conversation is around him in terms of his play and also as a teammate if he does indeed sign with the Houston Texans.
You know, Houston's 0-3, but they're not a bad 0-3. I mean, their games so far this year, They lost at the Chiefs that first game. They looked sort of discombobulated. Bill O'Brien didn't know what he was doing. 33-16 to the Ravens. I mean, they open up the season to maybe the two toughest opponents in that conference. And then yesterday at the Steelers, they lose by a touchdown, 28-21. I actually caught a bunch of that game. They didn't look terrible doing it. I mean, they've got some talent on that team. They've got, I know they lost DeAndre Hopkins. Will Fuller's a pretty good wide receiver. Like, if the Seahawks had to face Houston next week, would you think automatically, oh, they're 0-3, we're going to walk all over them? I wouldn't think so.
No.
They've still got Deshaun Watson. I mean, they're not a bad 0-3. So, you know, you add Earl Thomas, maybe you make it interesting in that division. We'll see.
The Niners have improved to 2-1 with a 36-9 win over the New York Giants. The good news is that the Giants and Jets look like teams that Seattle can certainly beat. They're also facing these AFC teams. But the bad news, the Niners are 2-1.
It is when you get the Niners with an opportunity to play the Giants while they're dealing with all these injuries. I'm sorry, Tom. I know it's your Giants, but they luck out here. And they're able to play ball control offense. They're able to capitalize on some turnovers from Danny Dimes there. But for the Niners, this is a good, solid win with Nick Mullins as their quarterback for one week, and then they get Jimmy Garoppolo back. It seems like they're going to have him back by next week. So we'll see how it all unfolds for the Niners, but I'm curious to see what they're going to look like against legitimate division opponents. Doesn't seem like they're going to get that for the next couple weeks.
The way the Giants and Jets have played this year, it almost drags me back into that conversation that some people have about whether or not the best college team could beat the worst NFL team. And there are people who always say, oh, why would you ever even have that conversation? Well, if you watch the Jets and Giants this year, you think, maybe it's possible. Those are two of the worst teams I've ever seen. Ever. And I know, was it Nick Mullins yesterday that played in place of Jimmy Garoppolo?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really saying a lot there. And I know Nick Mullins beat the Seahawks, but, I mean, my God. I'm not sure what... Both teams are beat up because of injuries, but I'm not sure I read into what that means for the Niners at all.
This is a question I was asked yesterday. Curious to see what you guys think. The Rams have fallen to 2-1 after a dramatic 35-32 loss to Buffalo. Are the Bills for real? I think that Josh Allen is a legit MVP contender. I don't care if Rosenthal is going to mock me for saying that. He's not going to hear it anyways. I think Josh Allen looks great. And I wonder if we just wrote the book on the kind of quarterback he could be a little too early. Because he kind of falls into a bit of a stereotype, too, of like great arm, accuracy, and, you know, is he the franchise guy? Are the question marks there? But he has made the most of the talent he has as far as his arm strength, being able to run around a bit, and then kind of put it together with a much better team this year. I think the Bills are legit.
I do, too. They always had a good defense. They always had a good defense, and then they just needed Josh Allen to step up and not be so inconsistent. They give him the weapons and the tools to be successful, and I think that offensive coaching staff has done an outstanding job with him. Yeah, they're dangerous. They're legit. And as I mentioned last week, as you watch the Rams and the Buffalo Bills, I think that's going to be a telling game. There were a couple telling games this week in terms of being able to mark where certain teams are, and I think the Rams are still a very good football team, being able to come back and score 29 unanswered points to make that game really interesting. But the Buffalo Bills are for real, and I think the Los Angeles Rams are going to be a very good team as well, and one that you can't take lightly.
Coming back from 28-3 down, we got to at least mention my main man, Jared Goff.
Oh, gosh.
But do we?
Comeback.
Do we, though?
He threw what?
Tom.
He was okay.
Oh,
what?
God.
What?
You're obsessed. You're obsessed, and it's become a problem. You're taking us off course here. All right. I'm going from one NFC division to another. So Packers and Bears, both undefeated, sitting atop their division. But the Packers on a roll, leading in points for, look phenomenal. The Bears, despite being 3-0, have benched Mitch Trubisky and are instead starting Nick Foles. Think of another team that you've heard going undefeated so far. I know it's only been 3 weeks. Undefeated and being like, ooh, we got a quarterback controversy, though. That's crazy.
You know what that tells me? That they were just waiting for that opportunity. That they didn't really believe that Mitch Trubisky was the guy. That they were just giving him the nod because it was close in camp and he was the former first-round pick. But the plan was to go to Nick Foles at the first sign of trouble. And they were in serious trouble against the Atlanta Falcons. And then you have Nick Foles who mounts this incredible comeback. I feel for him, but this was bound to happen. I think we all knew that.
If you're a quarterback and your organization brings in Nick Foles, beware. The seat could not be hotter than you are sitting on. I mean, can you imagine? Look, it's early in the season, so I suppose Foles still has time to screw up and give that job away, but don't bet on it.
All right, don't forget you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We sum it up next.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Ah! I'm going to go through a series of events here before we get to the tweet that I'm about to read. First thing you need to know, it's the fourth quarter in Seattle's win against the Dallas Cowboys. Chris Carson gets his leg grabbed by Cowboys defensive tackle Tristan Hill, and then Tristan Hill rolls and takes Carson's leg with him as he rolls.
Hand off to Carson, back to the left side, nothing doing there as Tristan Hill fought his way through the blockers, and now going down, it is Chris Carson. Oh, my goodness.
Thankfully, Chris Carson managed to get out of there without any ligament damage. It looked really bad on the broadcast. He was able to walk off with just some support from medical staff, but he was down on the field for a while. A scary moment from the team. All players are on their taking a knee. So he's, I'm going to say fine. I know he's not. I know there's a chance he doesn't play this week, maybe next week, whatever, but I'm going to say fine compared to how it could have been. Pete Carroll, though, talking with Danny and Gallant, not happy about it.
Playing. Yeah, I was really pissed about that one. That was—I don't know what's going to happen with that, but that was pissed because that guy hurt him, you know, unfortunately. And he has likewise. He's got a first degree strain, and we'll just have to see how that goes. I keep saying the same thing, but with a running back, it's a little bit more, you know, more of an issue than a big guy.
So the consensus, Jake, Tom, seems to be, hey, it's a dirty play. We're not happy with it. But this came out on my timeline this afternoon. Cowboys coach, this is from Michael Gelkin. Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy on the gator roll tackle from Tristan Hill, which caused a knee sprain for Carson. Quote, there is zero intent for injury here. I want to make that clear. You just continue to work on the fundamentals as season progresses. Here's my question for both of you guys. I don't know, but that's a good question, right? Like, what is the intent? And B, is it a head coach's job to tell us any certain thing? I think it's a dirty play. I think that, it's obvious to everyone. What's a head coach do in that situation when you're talking to reporters? But I agree with you, Tom. Then what was the intent? To stop him?
I don't know that. No, I mean, the play's already over. I mean, I've seen the play probably 6 or 7 times now. Unless there's just something that I'm missing. Carson's on the ground, play's over, everybody's getting up, he's got nobody on him, and then Hill rolls over him. So to say there's zero intent for injury there, really zero? You sure of that, Mike? And as far as you want to work on fundamentals, I don't even know what he's referring to there, if he's just trying to change the subject to something else. Now, to answer your second question about whether or not, like, when the coach gets asked about this, should he defend his player? Should he deflect away from his player? Or should he throw his player under the bus because we all know what he did? It's a tough spot for a coach to be in. I think the answer there is probably B. You just want to get it off. You just want to say words. You know how, like, when Pete Carroll answers a question, we just says
you
words.
You can tell he's just saying words.
And we move on.
Yes.
Right. And he just kind of confounds all the reporters enough don't follow up. That's what they're – because the reporters have two choices. They just go on to something else, or they press them and press them and press them and press them. And the local media is not going to do that. So it's sort of – there's a rhythm. There's a ritual to this thing that McCarthy knows, I'll just say something, then we'll move on.
There's a certain line that you go with that, right? You can either try and, you know, just not really mention anything and move on, or you can defend your player without going over the top. You know, hey, Hill's a good kid. He's a good player. You know, it's not who he is. You know, guys make mistakes. It's a heat of moment, blah, 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 blah. Without saying, yeah, that was a dirty, terrible play, and this guy, you know, he's going to get punished, right? He doesn't need to go that way. But to come out and say that there's zero intent to injure, are we stupid? Like, do you think we're all stupid? We know what we saw out there on the field, and you see players reacting the way that they are because they know. They're the ones that are in the lines, in between the lines, and they know what the rules of engagement are. And if these players are saying that the rules of engagement went past a certain level, I'm going to take their word for it. So I think that he went maybe a little too far in his defense of Hill, but he's certainly not going to admit that to the public. He's going to have his players back. And we've seen this with Pete Carroll, where even last week with Quandre Diggs, he said, yeah, it was elite. It was an unfortunate play. He was in the wrong. But he didn't go overkill and crush Quandre Diggs for it. He just admitted it and then moved on. But that's the part where I have a hard time with McCarthy's comments is to say that definitively there was zero intent. I can't get on board with that. I think it's when you have Pete Carroll reacting the way that he did and saying that he was pissed about it in his own words, to me that – he's not mad. He doesn't generally say those types of things. It's got to be something that is egregious for him to get riled up like that.
All right, let's move on and sum up our other big story of the day. Look, we've been talking about the problems with this defense, the things they need to fix. There are many of them, and no one knows that more than this team and Pete Carroll. That said, the Seahawks are currently 3-0. They are undefeated. They're sitting atop the NFC West. After three phenomenal games from this offense, and you know what? Some exciting moments from the defense, some big plays from the defense. I'll give them that. It's a good spot for the Seahawks to be in.
It definitely is. I mean, when you talk about being 3-0, it doesn't happen every day, folks. Pete Carroll, this is only the second time under the Pete Carroll era that they have gone to 3-0. It's a big deal. And you better enjoy every single win along the way because they are tough to come by in the NFL. I know that we have been spoiled here in Seattle by having multiple, you know, 10-win seasons and getting to the playoffs, but it is a difficult task. And to see that this team coach to its strengths and not try and fit a philosophy in a situation that just isn't going to work, I think has been very refreshing. And I think that you look at Russell Wilson, the way that he's playing at an unbelievable level. This offense and Brian Schottenheimer deserves a ton of credit for continuing to put him in great positions and their playmakers in great positions. And as you mentioned, Stacey, this defense, although they have given up huge plays and moments where you're screaming at the TV and frustrated, you have to give them credit for the big moments that they've come up with because they just haven't been moments here or there. They've been pivotal moments. And this last week, those pivotal moments led to Seahawk touchdowns. That is helpful in the grand scheme of things when you talk about this group, and hopefully they can improve defensively. Because guess what, guys? I hope I'm not wrong in saying this, but I don't think it can get any worse, you know, in terms of the secondary and how they're playing right now. And I think that they have a chance to continue to improve as they get healthier.
If I were to put out a Twitter poll right now with only two choices,
okay,
how do you feel about the Seahawks team? Confident or concerned? What do you suppose the divide would be?
I think it would be 70-30 confident.
Confident?
Yeah.
Is 30 for concern?
70-30.
Does that seem high, or does it seem like it's...
I think people feel like if the offense keeps performing, I think a high concern, because now we're invested, right? Now Seahawks fans are watching these three games and saying, oh my God, I see the ceiling for this offense. You're seeing stuff happen around the rest of the NFC, and you're thinking there's a path to the playoffs. Not just a path to the playoffs, there's a path to a number one seed. I know we're 3 weeks in, but I think that's why the concern would be, the concern is big. Still, but I think the majority of people look at 3-0 and say, hey, look at the record.
I'm going to do it right Stacey, now. How about that?
Stacey might be right in terms of the 70-30 split. I think it's actually closer. I think Twitterverse is very nervous about what we've seen defensively. So I think that it would probably be closer to 60-40 than 70-30, but we'll see. Everybody's feeling pretty good after a victory Monday. We'll see.
I think so. Tom, are you really sending out that poll?
Yo.
All right. Yeah, you are.
I am.
Fantastic. At Tom Wassel, you guys, go vote. And make sure that you skew it towards 70-30 so that I win this argument. All right. Pete Carroll is going to be speaking with the media at 3 p.m. You can hear that with Bob, Dave, and more next. Until then, this has been Tom, Jake, and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.